As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
All right, James. Well, we said it was Groundhog Day not that long ago. It's Groundhog Day again. Can you have two Groundhog Days in like a couple weeks? Maybe.
That's the whole thing with Groundhog Day, is it happens over and over again, Jonas.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. If people want to hear, all my Groundhog Day references, they can go back to the podcast after Game 4 when they were down 3-1, and I said, I can't believe we're doing this again. And
yeah,
you know that you were right. It wasn't over. At Game 4, they had to take it right to the limit again, and yeah, it's quite a thing. Game 7, overtime. You know, they were up 1-0. There's 11 minutes left in Game 7, and I was sitting there with my wife, who's not a big hockey fan, and I said, well, let's see if they can hang on to this. And then Lindholm scores. What did he score? A couple minutes later? Mm-hmm. And I said to her, I was like, I think it's over. And then wait for the intermission, and then it was over. So... yeah, same old, it's almost like this, if you had AI write a script for how a Leafs-Bruins playoff series would go, this is how it goes, you know? No matter what happens early in the series, it goes to 7 games and it ends in heartbreaking fashion for the Leafs.
So do you think you type into the AI, write a story about a hockey team that loses to the same team again and again, or just loses in general in the playoffs?
No, you just type in... write a story about the Toronto Maple Leafs in the first round of the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
And then, this would come up.
I got to tell you, James, like after they came back to make it to force Game 7, like I started to feel like, oh man, sure. Like I hope they're not like going to do this to their fans again. Not that it's intentional, obviously, like they wanted to win. They played hard. It's a one goal game, but man, like to raise the hopes again and then to let them down. Like it's just devastating. There's a lot for us to get into. We are recording this before the Friday press conference, obviously, where Brendan Shanahan, Keith Pelley, Brad G. Living will talk. We have heard from the players, obviously. We've heard from head coach Sheldon Keefe. We don't know at this point in recording what's going to happen with Sheldon Keefe, but is there anything you want to just touch on from Game 7 before we get to some of the big existential questions that are now looming?
I think the way that it played out in a way was good because it really highlighted the issues that they're dealing with here and the way they need to move forward and what they need to change. You know, it would have been more confusing if, you know, what if they outplay Boston and they lose 5-4 and the Stars all contributed well. And, you know, I think the complicating factor is, they did play really well in Game 5 and Game 6. And frankly, defensively, they played well in Game 7, too.
Sure. Yep.
You know, defensively, it was a good series for the Leafs. But there were too many. They had the second-best goalie. They were terrible on special teams. And their stars didn't come through for them. So those are...
yeah.
Those are some pretty... they're lucky they got to overtime of Game 7, given all the things that went wrong. And the other thing, and I know we'll probably talk about this, is that the bottom six forwards scored one goal in the whole series, which, you know, there's been a lot made of the production of the top offensive players in the Leafs, and there should be, obviously, because they make a lot of money. But if you're not getting production down the lineup, you know, like, 7-game series, they had 3 players with 4 points: Matthews, Domi, Bertuzzi. They had 5 players with 3 points: Nylander, who only played 4 games; Knies, who had a great series; Marner had 3 points; Lyubushkin had 3 points; and Morgan Rielly had 3 points. Mm-hmm. That's it. And then next up is John Tavares with 2 points in 7 games, and then everyone else had 1 or 0. So they only had 8 players with 3 points in a 7-game series. Like, Nylander led them in goals, and he only played 4 games, and he only had 3 goals. It's remarkable how little offense they produced in this series.
Yeah, and honestly, that's like the top takeaway, I think, is this issue persists. It was an issue, obviously, last year, and as the playoffs rolled along, especially obviously against Florida. But yeah, you're right. Like, you can't not score on the power play. Your stars can't not score for the most part, and then you get 0 contributions from anywhere else. And ultimately, James, like, I was thinking about it in the last day or so, the series just was played on Boston's terms. Like, if the series is going to be that way, you talked about this before, if it's just going to be a defensive battle, they're going to win. Like, and obviously the Leafs pulled out games 5 and 6, but to win 3 games in a row playing like that, not getting enough offense, it just was going to be tough. And man, it's like we talked about, a lot of the stuff we thought were problems basically from last summer were problems. Like, defensively, obviously they played pretty well in the series, but they didn't have anything from that third line, whatever the third line was. The penalty kill was a problem in the series. Like, they lost the series in games 1 through 4, right? Like, you can look at, yeah, you know, 5, 6, 7, but that's when you lose the series. Like, you can't go down 3-1, especially when you don't have home ice. And yeah,
I picked Boston to win the series, and the biggest reason was I wasn't confident in the Leafs goaltending, and I wasn't confident the Leafs could win the kind of series that Boston was going to try and play, which was going to be every game is 1-0 or 2-1. And that's the way,
yeah,
especially at the end, that's the way it turned out. And the Leafs are not really built to win that way. The Leafs' biggest advantage in the series was going to be their offensive firepower. And if that's nullified, which Boston did pretty brilliantly, it's going to be hard for them to win. And it's gotten so predictable that it's not even a great prediction that if you pick Boston at 7, like, that was, I thought that was the most obvious outcome for this game, for this series.
Well, and I don't know how you felt, I'm curious how fans would have felt. I didn't love the way that they talked about the game afterwards. I didn't love the way that they talked about the game or the series on locker cleanout day, where it just felt like, I don't understand what their expectation was. Like, you know, you had John Tavares saying, we're right there. You had William Nylander saying, well, we took it to 7, but it's like, guys, like, that's the first round. Like, you have to, like, get through that and then win 3 more series. Like, you're not close at all. Like, the only kind of, I thought, accurate reflection, or what I thought they should say, was, you know, Morgan Rielly talking about, like, are we close? Like, I don't know. Like, clearly not. Like, they're not close. Like, they're,
well,
they're,
it's it, the two players that had the best, and I wasn't there, you were there.
Yeah.
The two players that had the best locker cleanout day, kudos to them, Ilya Samsonov, who was brutally honest.
Yes.
And Morgan Rielly. Like, those, and I think most of the other ones were not great. And you know what's interesting, Jonas? Like, the Leafs have a massive PR staff. Like, they got, like, at least 4 people on that staff. Like, can't they talk to the players about what to say? And
that's, I don't think that's fair. Like, what are they can't get in their head and say, like, this is how you should respond to this question. This is how you respond to this question.
But if you're one of those players, like, it's pretty easy to get it up there and say what fans want to hear. Like, it's pretty easy to say.
Yeah, but to me, honestly, James, that maybe speaks to, like, the way that this has been built from the top on down, where there just has not been accountability really for a while now. You know, you lose in the first round, and, like, everything stays the same, and those core players are the same, and, like, you know, the president obviously stays, and, like, Keith has been here now for a while, and it's like
Groundhog Day, Jonas.
Yeah, like, I just would, yeah, like, I thought even Keith after game 7 saying, like, you know, they played great, and, like, that's a close, like, they're not, like, they did play fine in games 5 through 7, but it doesn't matter. You can't keep losing in the first round and just have excuses every time for why you lost.
Or can you?
Well, I guess you can. I mean,
it's been working so far.
There. I mean, it sure looks like Brendan Shanahan is going to be back or remain as team president. Is that surprising to you or?
No, it's not that surprising to me. I mean, we don't know for sure yet, but to announce on Monday that there's a press conference on Friday with Shanahan, the GM he hired, Tree Living, and the new president of MLSE, I don't think they're all going to get up there together and fire Shanahan with him up there on the podium. So, you know, it seems to me like they're gonna come back with the same management group, which is really strange.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think. I was trying to think of a situation in sports where an executive gets 10 years and wins as little in the playoffs as they have. I mean, maybe there's examples. I couldn't think of anyone. Like the closest I could think of, and I didn't actually do the research to see how many playoff series this person won, but Ernie Grunfeld was like the Washington Wizards GM forever, and for a while they were bad. But even they, I think, won some playoff series. Like this is, it's like, James, like, you know, like they've done a lot of good things in this last decade. They were not in a good place, obviously, when Brendan Shanahan took over.
They were a joke back then.
They were, like, right?
They were a laughingstock team. Like they were a bottom 5 or 7 organization in the league for years. You know, I started covering the team in 07, 08, and they were a mess. Like they were doing things like trading Tuukka Rask for Raycroft and trading first round picks for Vesa Toskala and giving him a big contract. And like, it was the stuff they were doing was like, it was like whack-a-mole covering the team. Cause it's like, oh, they did something bad again. They did something dumb again. And the team's bad. And it's funny though, Jonas, like I think I said, maybe I said this to you during the series, or maybe it was to CJ, you know, that 2013 team, I think you could respect them more than some of these teams just because like they didn't have a lot of talent and they really played over their heads and they really left everything on the ice in that 2013 series against Boston and pushed it to 7 games. And they had no business doing that, but this team has all the talent in the world and doesn't, you know, I don't know.
Well, but I mean, the fatal flaw, like obviously became, it was almost like blind belief, like from Brendan Shanahan, that at some point he was going to be right and those players were going to come through. And like, it was like the evidence was right in front of you or right in front of him, and it was just ignored again and again and again. Like Kyle Dubas obviously had the line last year where it's like, I think it was like full belief versus like stubborn resistance or full belief or something like that. And Brendan Shanahan had full belief. And that's what makes, you know, keeping him around as team president hard to kind of understand. It's his plan. Like this grand plan was his, that like betting on these players and they have not come through. And like last summer when you and I wondered like, how the heck are they going to do this again? They did it again. The same thing happened. And now it's like, well, what happens now? So what do you think happens now? Let's get into that.
Well, you asked if I'm surprised if Shanahan stays. And I said, no, because I think what they're going to try and do and sell to the board and sell to Keith Pelley, the new CEO or president of MLSE, I think what they're going to do is say, we're going to get a new coach. We're going to get someone high profile who's won before. That's going to be step one in our change everything plan. And we're going to trade at least one of the star players and change the roster and let Tree Living cook and make the team more like he was trying to this season, you know, bring in more Edmondsons and Labushkins and Connor Dewars and Reeves and, you know, make them tougher and more playoff ready. You know, look at how hard they played in the series against Boston. They only lost by 1 goal in Game 7. We need to give, you know, Tree Living hasn't had enough time. We're going to give him some more time to make the roster more in the way he wants it to be and trade one of the stars. And we got a new tougher, hard-nosed coach that's going to yell at the players more. And that's the vision. That's we're changing the Shanahan plan. We're making some of those changes and we're going to be better for it. And it would be, we don't need to change more than that because that would be a panic move and because we're so close. And ownership, I mean, to date, ownership has bought what they've been selling, right? So,
well, what he's,
you know, if I'm a fan, right? If I'm a fan of the Leafs, I think there hasn't been a lot of coverage or a lot of analysis over ownership's role in what's going on. And I think there needs to be if that's what happens. If the idea that they're going to fix this by firing Keefe, bringing in Berube, and trading Mitch Marner, probably in a trade that you lose, is all that they need to do, then I think the fan base needs to really question even higher up the chain, well, what's going on here?
Well, and I think the only thing I would add to your pitch that Brendan Shanahan might make to Keith Belly is, listen, like, we didn't have Nylander for the first three games of the series. We didn't have Matthews for a couple games of the series. He was hurt when he came back, and we still pushed it to seven. I don't buy that excuse. Like, I, as we've talked about before, like, lots of teams go through shit. You know, Vancouver obviously made it to the second round without their best player. It happens. Like, that happens. The other thing, like, that I thought you brought up an interesting point about, like, rebuilding the team more in Tree Living's image. What I've never understood, dating back to the time he was hired, is how little analysis or understanding there is about what happened for him in Calgary. Just like I didn't understand how there was no look back generally in the market about Lou Lamoriello before he got to Toronto and what was happening in New Jersey. His teams in Calgary weren't good. Like, they never advanced past the second round. They missed the playoffs, I think, 4 out of 9 years. Like, do we know that he can build a team that's actually going to be successful? Like, I still don't know. I based on what they've done so far, my questions are just as big as they were before.
I think his track record points to someone who's an okay GM.
Conventional.
You know, I think that, but that's what they want, though, right? Like, I think, like, they want someone who's going to bring in Labushkin and Edmondson. Like, that's what they're trying to do. Like, they're trying to change the image of the team and make it into more of, I don't know. They want it to be more like, I don't know, like St. Louis was 5 years ago or whatever, right? Like, they're trying to chase what other teams have done and the ways that they've won.
Right. Yeah, I think that's
so
right.
I mean, they still do have innovative people in the front office, right? And, you know, they still got a large analytics group, and they still got, you know, like, people like Wes Clark, and who's clearly done a nice job of finding prospects deeper in the draft. And, you know, the front office still has, you know, some forward thinking people, but over time, you know, it's going to be molded more in Tree Living's image, and a very mixed bag in his first year, for sure. But I think at the end of the day, though, Jonas, and you and I have talked probably, and we've probably talked enough about what Tree Living did this year and the moves they made. At the end of the day, that I think the biggest thing is that keeping the core together, keeping everything the same, was I think the biggest mistake. And that's not on Tree Living.
Well, it's not on Tree Living. He is the general manager. Now, you can say, well, if Brendan Shanahan decides they're not moving anyone from the core, like, there's nothing he can do.
And that's what happened, right? Like, I mean, like, Tree Living comes in with 5 weeks before the no movement clauses kick in. Like, what's, and, you know, and a president had already called all the stars and said they're staying. So that's not on Tree Living. What's he going to do? He's going to get hired and come in and say, no, you're wrong. I know you called all the stars and said they're not going anywhere, but I overrule you. He's the boss.
Well, then don't take the job, because, like, you're judged on what the team does. Like, I'm sorry. Like, that's
People take these jobs in compromised positions all the time because it's a fantastic job, and you try and win under those parameters as best you can. And, you know, I don't think it's, I don't know.
Well, if you don't want to put that on him, then we can put other, like, there's other stuff to pick through. And we've talked about that a lot.
I don't think trading the stars I don't think he had any choice in that. And I think that's part of the problem too, is that, like, the president's very involved in hockey operations. I mean, that's part of, you know, so, you know, if you didn't like the team that they had before this season, like, he was involved there too. So he has to wear some of the mistakes that they've made over the years.
For sure. I just don't understand. I mean, you date back to last summer. I don't know how he didn't, because, like, it was pretty clear Dubas was going to do something if he stuck around.
I think, Jonas, you got to be careful reading too much into what Dubas said on the way out, because I think he knew he was leaving. Like, I think he had other offers that were going to be there, and I don't think he wanted to be here. So,
okay, but I going to assume that if he stayed, they wouldn't have done what they done. I mean, maybe, I mean, who knows what happens in that situation to Shanahan? Who knows? Like, anyway, I think the point is, James, like, the writing was on the wall, especially with Mitch Marner. Like, I know he's taking a lot of heat right now, but like, it was very clear at the end of last season that something had, like, it felt like it was time, and you could kind of see it on his face.
I think he thought he was going to get traded last year. That's
true. And
I think that he was probably looking and waiting and up until the no move kicked in and thinking like, am I getting traded? And
yeah.
And also, I mean, I don't know for sure because his camp is selective in who they talk to, but my understanding is that it didn't seem like he was 100% against it either.
That is my understanding. Yes. I mean, it's not for him. Like, you can kind of, we've seen that more and more as time has gone on. This isn't working for him. Like, the whole year, like, I'm there every day. I see it more. It just didn't look like he was enjoying himself anymore. He didn't look like he was as invested as he had been. And I think he's just, to me, like, it just looks like someone who's beaten down by everything that's happened. And like, it's hard, James. Like, I think we underrate some of this stuff. It's hard to play at home, number one. It's hard to play at home when you're a star player. And it's hard to play at home when, like, you're not great at handling criticism and handling the spotlight. And like, as all that stuff built up over playoffs and his, you know, inability to kind of come up big in some of those moments, and the scrutiny increased, and like, obviously the contract was a big part of that.
Well, he pays attention to everything.
Right.
He and his camp pay attention to everything, like, to such a degree. I mean, that, you know, Marner's camp has been mad at me and blackballed me going back like 5 or 6 years. And I have no idea why. Like, then no one ever said to me like, oh, I didn't like this thing you wrote. Like, I think that our coverage of Marner has been largely positive, you know, going way back to when he was drafted and when he first came into, I mean, his rookie season, he was phenomenal. You know, and like, he's regular season, he's been a great, great player. And I think that we've written that, but there's such a sensitivity there. You know, so there's all these feuds going on, and you hear about, you know, he's got like private security people that harass media people. And there's really weird stuff that's going on. It's really strange things that go on with Marner. And sometimes I feel bad for him that he's in this, you know, and Sunday's his birthday, the day after they get eliminated. He's 27 years old. Like, he's not even a young guy anymore. He's been in the league 8 years, and this stuff's still going on. I remember I wrote at one point, do you remember I wrote that, I don't know, was it 4 or 5 years ago, maybe not even that long, a column about that Mitch Marner doesn't deserve this cloud that's hanging over him in Toronto, and it's being created by the people around him. But I don't know. I think you're 27. You need to have some agency and get control of it, and it doesn't feel like it's going to happen.
Well, I think everything really started with the contract and the dispute. And obviously he missed the start of camp, and then he ends up getting a contract that hasn't, I mean, it's given his regular season production, it's fine. Like, but like, obviously the playoffs is its own beast. Well, and that's
what
matters.
He's not supposed to be, what is he, the fifth highest paid player in the league? Like, that's not
right.
In the playoffs, wasn't an appropriate contract. It didn't match what his peers were getting as a comparable. Like, if you look at what, I can't even remember now what the peers were when we went through that, but, and the Leafs organization didn't want to pay him that. Like, they weren't happy about that contract at all, you know, and they bent over backwards that summer. I remember in August that they gave him the Tavares contract as an RFA, as an offer, and they turned it down.
Well, and I think the point is, like, that really kind of poisoned things, and the criticism really increased at that point. And then that's the year.
But I don't understand why he pays so much attention to the criticism. Like,
yeah, but I don't even know that it's him necessarily paying attention to the criticism. I think you just end up hearing about it a lot, whether it's through friends, whether it's through family. Like, yeah. I don't think you can get away from it unless, like, you decide, you know what? You tell everyone around you, do not tell me anything about anything. I'm just going to play. And well, obviously
he said,
like,
in the past that he's done that, right? Like, he said he got rid of social media.
Yeah, but that's, you know, getting rid of social media is different than telling everybody around you, zip it. Like, maybe he did that. I have no idea. But the point is,
a lot of players do though, right? Like, a lot of players come to Toronto and they're like, you know, my dad, I remember players have told me like, oh, my dad was texting me that so-and-so said this. And I just told him, I don't want to know. And
yeah. And I think the Leafs have been waiting for that. They have been waiting for him to get to that point where that stops happening and stops affecting him. And there were just so many moments this year. I wrote about some of them, but like there were more that I didn't even mention, just where like you could just see like something was not right here. And so I think there's a distinction. Like it's easy to say, well, it's stupid for a team to trade one of its best players, but like if one of their best players hasn't played like one of their best players in playoff after playoff after, after playoff, and one of the few ways to potentially improve the team or change the team is to move that player, I think you have to explore it. The interesting thing, James, is like they don't control this. Like they've set themselves up where he could say to them, I'm staying. Like,
yeah. I mean, the Leafs, assuming that they can do it, the Leafs have three options with Marner. They can keep him for the final year and let him walk as a free agent, which mm-hmm. doesn't seem great. They could sign him to an extension, which is going to be a lot of money. It's probably going to be 8 years, $12 million plus, one of the richest contracts in NHL history. Or they can try and go the difficult route of forcing a trade. They're probably not going to win the trade. They're probably going to get a lesser asset. But you look at those three options, assuming that a trade is possible, it feels like the best option, doesn't it? Like letting him walk for nothing, you get nothing. So...
Well, you get the year, right? You try it.
You get 1 year. Yeah.
Right.
But people are really worried they're going to lose the trade. And I mean, you're going to lose the trade if he walks for nothing in free agency. Like you're not winning there. And if this continues to be an issue on the ice in the playoffs, you're going to lose there too. You're going to lose in not having the cap space to change the composition of your roster. There's a lot of ways you lose if you play it out, and extending him just feels like impossible. Like I just can't see that happening. I can't imagine there's going to be contract talks. They've already committed to Nylander and Matthews. Marner had a really poor postseason again. So that's why it comes down to that. The thing that makes the most sense is trying to force a trade here.
I guess I think it's more, I mean, you're right, that it's better to trade him than to just play it out again and hope that again that it'll change. But I think making a trade here is just going to be really hard, because like you have to check a lot of different boxes. Like you have to find a team that he wants to go to, b a team that wants to trade for him, c a team that wants to pay him, d a team that wants to give you something that you want. Like it's a mm-hmm. lot of
yeah
shit like to get through, and that's not going to be easy. Like he can really play hardball with him, and we saw, like, to go back to that contract dispute, he is an agent who's not afraid to play hardball. And so like I don't know,
well, it's gonna get messy, Jonas. Like the Leafs are just gonna have to be willing to play ugly, I think. And yeah
I feel bad, like, I mean, to your point about feeling bad, like it's sad that it might end this way for him. Like it's a really great story, like a kid grew up here, wanted to play here, fan of the team, drafted, you know, fourth overall.
Yeah, fourth, yeah.
My brain is melting. Fourth overall, becomes a superstar, one of the best players in the history of the franchise. Like, that is not in dispute. Like, he is a great player, but it just hasn't happened. And it's like, it kind of sucks for him that it might end this way. But, like, that's pro sports, and I don't know what else they could do. Like, what else could they do in terms of, like,
major change? It could be a happy ending for him, right? Like if, you know, he goes somewhere else and the pressure's off a little bit more and he has success. I mean, you know, and, like, and that could be, and yeah. And then, you know, he could do the same thing Kadri did. Like, you know, I always believed in myself and I knew I could do it, and the Leafs didn't believe in me, and, you know, look at me, I did it. So he's probably going to want to go to a contender. So, but yeah, I don't wish any ill will to him. I kind of feel bad, because it just feels like a very dysfunctional, unhappy situation. And he's living the Canadian dream. Like he's playing, you know, he's playing in the NHL, making a lot of money. And it seems like he should be the happiest guy on earth. And it's interesting. It's I don't know.
Somewhere along the way, it just felt like it got poisoned. And like you really heard it in that press conference. I guess not a press conference, a scrum, you know, when he was asked about Ilya Samsonov, I think it's like middle of January. And he basically says, like, I've been there, everybody's against you. And it's like, that was alarming. It's like, that's how he feels. Like that shouldn't
be. He said that, remember, in the Florida series last year, and they went down 3-0 in the series, and their season was it felt effectively basically over. And he was talking about the media and stuff. It was like, it's just very confusing why he would be worried about the media in a moment like that. Like, I get that the media can be overwhelming. I get that there's a lot of people talking about everything and people are getting things wrong and people are saying things that you don't like. And I mean, I don't know, like people are saying things about me I don't like and you and like The Athletic. And like, it's just, that's the world we live in now. That's social media. Like there's, you're going to take a lot of arrows he's such a talented guy that, and like I said, he's living the Canadian dream. Like, and to let all that stuff drag you down is, it's a shame.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a break. And then there is obviously a lot more for us to get into.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
Any more Marner you want to explore? Is there another move that we're not thinking of? Like, I mean, you could go to John Tavares and say, you know what? We love you. Like, you've done everything you can, but
you could take the captaincy away. I guess you could go to Tavares and say, you know, we're going to make a change. And
I think it might be time for that anyway, regardless.
Yeah. You could say to Tavares, you know, we're not going to extend you. We're going to take the captaincy away. Is there any interest on your part in going elsewhere?
The answer is no.
Let me know what you think of this. Like, do you think would any part of you go to Tavares and say, hey, we're interested in an extension on like a hometown discount and like we would keep you on like a much lower number and you can, no. You wouldn't do that?
I would not.
What if it's like, what if it's a really low number?
Why not? You can't keep, because like it's too where weird. The organization is at right now with what's happened to then extend the captain of the team. I don't think it makes any sense. Like you can't do that right now. Like beyond the fact that like he's going to be 34, you don't know how this season's going to play out. Like we keep getting reminded how quickly the bottom drops out for guys at a certain point in the age.
No, bracket. But Jonas, I'm talking about him being like a third line player and like playing the last three or four years of his career.
If I'm in charge, I don't touch it. Not now. Right. You can revisit it after. Well, there's no reason to do it now, James. Like is the point. He wants to stay like after next year. He's not going to want to go anywhere.
Well, you're right. Maybe they have a more successful. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
See
yeah.
how he looks and then decide. And like, if he wants to take the Mark Giordano minimum contract for 2 years at that point, okay. Talk about it then. See how
I was thinking like 3 years at 2 million or something like that, or like, you know, something where it fits on the third line basically. Cause I think that
to keep extending this core at like at this point, and then you're like, I just don't think you can do it. Like he clearly, like he is trying to do everything he can to prolong his career and be as impactful as he can. And like of their, like he had a, okay series against Boston. Like, obviously he didn't deliver enough offensively. Part of that is how he was used. Their power play being bad was part of that.
I don't agree with you on some, like, some of your pieces and on some of our podcasts you've talked about usage, but, like, you know, like, there's elite players that get used in a defensive role that still produce offense around the league. Like, you watch,
dude, he's 33 in his 15th season. Like, it's context. Like, it's, he had a 34% zone start for the series.
He's on power play one, though, Jonas. Like, he should have more than
power
2 points
play was
in the series.
Yeah, but
he's part of, that, though. Like, usage.
Yeah, but, like, sorry, James. Like, he is the least, to me, he's the least responsible for that. He's like the big man down low in basketball. Like, he needs someone to get him the ball. Like, it's everything around him to me that was dysfunctional. Like, I don't know.
Well, anytime the puck's on his stick on power play one and it's not in front of the net, it's a problem. So
that's who he is. Like, that's his, he's good at cleaning up garbage around the net and cashing in loose change. And, like, there just wasn't a lot of that. I think you're right. If it's Austin Matthews being asked to do that, but, like, he's in his 15th season. Like, if that's a problem with the way the roster was built, like, you and I talked about this at the trade deadline, that they needed to add another center who could do that stuff. So you don't have to ask Tavares to, because, like, you mentioned the bottom six, their bottom six couldn't score at all. And then one of the two lines that you do have that can score is being used like they're a fourth line. Like, that, I'm sorry, that doesn't make any sense. Like, and that's why we talked about Henrique and we talked about Wenberg, and, like, even last summer we talked about it, and, like, they didn't address it. Like, that's one of the more puzzling things for me, James, about this season, is they had issues that they just didn't address. And I don't know why. Like, I still don't get that. So.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about it during the season. Like, there were people saying that they should punt on the season and, you know, like, they should sell. And it's like, I don't know. You're in this limited window with Austin Matthews, so you got to try and win.
Well, and this is a good reminder, James, of why I think we were right to point that out, is, like, you just don't know how fragile these things are. Like, you could get into one postseason where you have this great team and he gets sick and then he gets hurt and then, like, the series is over. You know what I mean? Like, you can't assume anything. He's going to be 27, obviously, in the fall. Nylander's 28. Like, I don't know, to keep hoping that you're going to be Washington or St. Louis, one of these teams that keeps together forever and ever and ever, and at some point wins. Like, I don't know. That's just, like, kind of naive to me.
So. I don't want to depress Leafs fans listening, but it's possible that this has been their peak. And, like, you know, it's possible that Matthews has already had the best season, regular season anyway, of his career. You know, it's not always an upward trajectory as you approach 30.
We mentioned Keefe. If you were in charge, do you keep him around, or that's
No. I think Keefe's a good coach, and I think he'll probably have success elsewhere. But I just think that they need to change more things. The organization needs new voices on the ice and behind the bench. And, you know, the reality in the NHL is that, I mean, I think he's the fifth most longest tenured coach right now. And all of the ones, fifth or sixth, all of the ones ahead of him won a Stanley Cup in their organization. Mm-hmm. So that's just the reality of the position, is you don't stay on very long. Like, it's not a long-term position in pro sports, but especially in the NHL. Like, look how many coaching changes there were. I mean, just today, Jonas, there's two coaching hires. Bannister's staying with St. Louis and Travis Green was hired in Ottawa. There's coaches, it's like a revolving door.
But you know what's going to happen, though, James? And you and I think, talked about this the other day, not on the podcast. But now you're going to set up a situation, if this is what they do, where they will fire a coach, hire another coach, and then potentially, if next season doesn't go as planned, Shanahan's contract will be up, potentially. We don't know what's going to happen.
Jonas, I wouldn't rule out that Shanahan's extended here at this press conference on Friday.
That would be something. But I guess what I was getting to is they could get to a situation where all of a sudden you have a new front office and now you have this coach that you've just given, I don't know, 4 or 5 year deal, whatever it is. It's like, well, the cycle continues where you just, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, it's dysfunctional. Yeah.
But they're hoping that they hit. They're hoping that, you know, they're hoping that the team breaks through, you know, and they're going to add more playoff like players and make the team grittier and more defensive and find another goalie. You know, they got lots of cap space. I mean, some of the shows to come, we're going to get into the roster building and what they need to do in free agency and all that kind of stuff. But we're waiting for, you know, some of the, who's the new coach going to be, what's happening with the management group, all that kind of stuff. And then we'll get into that, but there's a lot of decisions for them to make. And, you know, if they have a good off season, this is going to be a good team next year.
Yeah. We'll get to that point at some point in the summer. I mean, it's tough. I thought Keith, good for him and how he handled his locker cleanout press conference. He basically took the blame for everything. And there was stuff like he deserves blame for. Like, it's difficult to ignore their offense coming up dry after being so great in the regular season. It's difficult to ignore the power play stuff. I don't blame him for the penalty kill, but it's difficult to ignore them coming up small in big games. Like, obviously in this series, they didn't. Game 5 and 6, they were right there, and he deserves credit for that. But one playoff round in 5 cracks is just not enough. And it's hard to get around. It's hard to get around when the president has been around double that time. And, you know, they won one round, but like you pointed out, coaches don't get this much time. You just don't, especially with a team that's built to win, right? Like, tough to make a case that he should stay.
I mean, he's been fortunate to get the 5 years, really. Like, if you look at the track record around the league, and, you know, I think they...
Yeah.
I'm surprised, actually, it hasn't been announced yet. I guess, I guess they have to go through, he's got 2 years left on the contract, so they need to go through ownership and the board and everything, and get things approved and figure out what the plan is. And, you know, I think it's...
The extent, looking back, I thought this at the time, it wasn't going to change anything as far as the security. It's just... kind of silly. What's the point?
Yeah, the way it was explained to me is that it doesn't particularly matter, because if Keith gets hired somewhere else, then the Leafs aren't on the hook to pay that money, and he's probably going to get hired somewhere else, right? So
yeah, fair enough.
Does it really matter if there's if Keith gets hired by Winnipeg a week later, the Leafs is going to be for similar money, and the Leafs don't owe him anything? So what's to worry about? It's not the same as the Babcock contract, where what did Babcock have left? 4.5 years, 5.5 years? At over $6 million a year. That's a lot more.
Yeah. I mean, he should get hired somewhere else. He has been very successful in the regular season. You can also make the counterpoint to some of what I said. What is he supposed to do? If his star players don't act like star players, that's partly on him. Part of his job is to find a way to get them to act like that. But if they don't do it enough, what are you supposed to do? You know, I think one underrated point about his time is at some point as a coach, you just need to get lucky with a goalie and need to have the best goalie in a series. And they just almost never had that, including this year. We didn't talk about the Joseph Woll stuff. That's brutal timing for an injury. He's dominating games 5 and 6, and then he's just out for game 7.
It's really tough because Woll's had so many injuries now that.
Yeah.
You just,
and he's not as young as people think. He's basically the same age as Samsonov. He's young, but he's not
He's going to be 26. He's going to be 26 this year, right? Draft as Matthews. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's the same draft as Austin Matthews. So, you know, he's not much younger than Matthews. And the thing that's held Woll back his whole career has been, there's been a lot of injuries going back to his time with the Marlies, and it slowed his development. But it's to the, Samsonov's not going to be back. I mean, we're going to need a whole show, and we're going to do a mailbag show coming up maybe next week. This show is kind of like a teaser for what's to come. But they're going to need to add an established goalie to play with Woll, because you can't count on him because of all the injuries, you know, and you can see the potential there, but you just don't know how many games he's going to be able to play.
Yes, 100%. All right. Well, we will pick through all that. We will be back. At the latest, on Friday, after we hear from Keith Pelley and Brendan Shannon and Bradtree Living and see what the heck is going to happen here. Thank you for listening. Frankie Corrado is going to be on the Athletic Hockey Show on Wednesday, which is tomorrow from when we're recording this. Check that out. Go to theathletic.com/Leaf Report if you want to sign up and check out all the stuff that we have on Leafs and everything else in sports.
I got to give Frankie a shout out. I was in the press box watching one of the games in the Leafs Bruins series, and he was sitting next to me, and it's a real treat to sit next to a former NHL player and have them, like, he's got such a good eye for, I mean, he feels like he could be a coach, like just the way that he sees the game and talks about the game. And
for sure,
so it was a lot of fun watching. I think it was game three. I was sitting with him in the press box, and so, you know, listen to, that's our national, the Athletic Hockey Show is our national show where they get into league wide stuff. I encourage people, if you've never listened to it, to check it out and listen to Frankie talk with Sean and Sean, as we call them around here, Sean Gentile and Sean McIndoe.
Perfect. All right. Well, we will be back later in the week. Thank you to Punch. Thank you to you, James. Thank you to everyone for listening. See you later in the week.